Tennessee just sounds perfect. Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts. This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise, all things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC. Hey, this is Annie.
And Samantha.
And welcome to Stuff Mom Never Told You, a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. Today's episode is another that is a long time coming for me.
For you, yes.
Yes. Because about a year ago, there was an event at Atlanta's Center for Puppetry Arts, which was focused on women and puppetry. And we were trying to go there and record it and do a podcast on it. But based on availability of producers and hosts, it did not happen.
Oh.
And it's been the one that got away. Similarly to a lot of the interviews we've had lately that we finally have made happen. And I've recently, with all the things like Dragon Con,
right,
which has a lot of puppets and a lot of puppetry panels, and Dark Crystal,
right,
the Netflix show, which I love. And in Atlanta, there's a Halloween tradition of this puppet show called The Ghastly Dreadfuls.
Right.
And was finally able to get some women in puppetry and make it happen.
We got some big names in here in the puppetry world, as you told me before they walked in. I was like, oh no, am I supposed to be nervous? But yeah, I kind of forgot what, because I have no idea in this whole world of puppetry. And I kind of forgot one of my favorite movies, which we're going to mention in the interview, which is Lily, which was like the 1950s, 1960s old classic with one of my favorite actresses, Leslie Caron. I think that's how you say her name, Caron. She's French-American. I'm not really good at any of those things. But she is a beautiful dancer. And there's this whole, and we talk about the synopsis of the film, about her interacting with all these puppets. And it's I kind of was like, wow, yeah, there's a whole depth to puppetry that I didn't think of outside of Sesame Street.
Right. And it's interesting you say that because I never watched Sesame Street.
Wow.
So I had like a reverse of what I think most people in at least the United States have, where I never saw Sesame Street.
Muppet Babies?
No.
No, none of those?
Mm-mm. I did see Muppet Christmas Carol.
Okay, okay.
See,
that's what I think of.
Right. For me, it was definitely Dark Crystal. That was something that when I was a kid, I was a weird kid, and I loved the movie.
Well, I guess Labyrinth as well as Neverending Story.
Yeah.
Is on those lines too.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And I feel like a lot of us don't realize that we were seeing puppets in a lot of different forms, and that also is something we're going to touch on. But I guess we should get into the interview because we keep spoiling.
I know.
Everything.
It was very exciting. I felt like I learned a lot.
It was a lovely interview, and you'll hear from our guests, but some of them flew in today.
Right, from Quebec. We have to go visit them during that little festival.
I am planning on it. I am in. Yeah, it was a great conversation, and actually, we might follow up and have another, because there are a lot of women puppeteers. Came out of the woodworks when I put out my feelers.
And
I was like,
ooh.
So if any listeners are hearing this and thinking, ah, that's me, you should write in.
Yes.
But in the meantime, we'll let our interviewees introduce themselves.
Hello, my name is Louise Lapointe. I come from Montreal in Canada, and I'm the director of Castellier, which is an organization devoted to puppetry arts, presenting puppetry arts. So every year we organize an international puppet festival, presenting performances for children and for adults. And also we have a regular season.
Cool.
Hi, I'm Kristen Haverty, and I'm the producer at the Center for Puppetry Arts here in Atlanta, Georgia. And while we don't have a festival, we present work for families and for adults throughout the year. And also have a museum and education program as well.
Cool. Yes, I'm a big fan. And I'm sure I would love everything you've got going on as well. But once I make it to Quebec.
Anytime.
Yes. And we like to start with kind of a very baseline definitions on the show. So if you wouldn't mind, what is puppetry? Because I think when a lot of people think about it, at least here in the States, there's one particular thing they're thinking of. So if you could kind of expound upon what is puppetry.
Oh, yeah, I think of Sesame Street.
Exactly, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think that's true. Puppetry, in its essence, is an inanimate object manipulated in front of an audience is sort of my definition. But really, puppetry, there are so many different styles, both in techniques and also in world traditions as well. It can really be so many things. It's a very visual form. It's visual storytelling also. What do you think?
Well, in French, we call it, we are devoted to the arts of puppetry, including object theater, shadow theater, marionette, because, yeah, it's an incredible array of different techniques. And puppetry art is a complete art form. It's more like opera, because it involves visual arts, theater, dance, movement, music. So it's a really complete and intricate art form and so poetic. So that, for me, I agree with Christine's definition, but it's, like I say, it's the arts of puppetry.
Absolutely.
Nice. And if you wouldn't mind going into both of you, how did you get into this field? How did you get to where you are?
Myself, I studied first in visual arts in university, and then I wanted to go on studying but not do a master degree in visual arts. So I said, okay, I'm going to do another degree in theater, in technical production and scenography. And it was in school that I met a great puppeteer, and I was fascinated about the strength of the art form. So I decided to devote myself to that afterwards. And so I worked for more than 20 years in Quebec at the Conservatoire d'Art Dramatique as a stagehand, props mistress, mask maker. And it allowed me to work with materials all the time, but still I kept a practice of building puppets on the side. And then I became a director of a festival, and now I'm more presenting than building. But I hope to come back to building soon.
Yeah, for me, going back to Louise talking about puppetry being all the arts, when I was a student, I was interested in music and film and theater, and I was trying to find ways to combine them all into what I wanted to be when I grew up. And I went abroad to study my junior year in Prague and Bali, and both of those have incredible puppetry traditions, and suddenly it sort of clicked for me, and I realized that puppetry was such a vibrant art form, and I wanted to know more about it. So I came back and happened to my college professor, happened to be an amazing person in the puppetry field, Dan Herlin, who is in New York and doing really great work. And so I studied with him after I was back, and then went and toured for a year as a touring puppeteer and in the Northwest, which was an amazing experience for anyone who has ever been on a theatrical tour. it really, you know, gets you in the trenches, and it's also just a really great learning experience for how audiences respond, because you're in a different town every day in front of a different audience, really. And so doing that with this puppetry company was really taught me about the art form and about performing in general. And then I moved to Atlanta and Atlanta has this amazing Center for Puppetry Arts, and I started working as a teaching artist. I worked as a docent. I did shows for XPT, which is our experimental puppetry theater program. Started performing in the Ghastly Dreadfuls, which is an adult puppetry show there, and just basically did every job I could possibly do at the center. And then the center was planning a international festival in 2000. It was going to happen in 2009, and my producer was looking for someone to help with that. And I said, I want to be a part of that, and pushed my resume at her. And that was 10 years ago since I worked on that. And that was our producer, and she recently retired. And now I've am the producer of the center. And it's been a long process, but a really loved working in puppetry and all of the possibilities that are inherent within that art form.
Yeah, and that's something I personally am really curious about because I've seen a lot of, I think people forget that there's puppetry in a lot of big movies and you just don't think about it in the mm-hmm. same way and you don't appreciate it in the same way perhaps. But I'm always curious about, like, because I'm an actor, but like the performance of it and giving life to something in movement and in voice. What about it? Is there something specific that drew you to puppetry, or is there something about it that you love that you find very unique to it?
Well, I must admit, puppetry for me is a passion. It's stronger than me. I don't know why. I'm consulting. But it's an art form that keeps fascinating me because of its endless power of metaphorism, of poetry, of strength that touch the human soul, not with the text necessarily. You can have text in puppetry, but not necessarily. And how a simple gesture, but the good one, can make you feel all sorts of feelings and also make you understand things. For me, it's an answer. Puppetry arts, they can answer some of the basic questions, and that's why I'm still interested so much into it. It's a passion.
Mm-hmm. And I think for me, it's also the tactile nature of puppetry, like especially thinking of films and where there was a movement for a while to go CG and to go digital. Mm-hmm. And so many people are now going back to puppetry to achieve those effects because they're realizing there's just nothing quite like that actual physical object being manipulated by an actual human being in real time.
Right.
I mean, stop motion, I guess, I just think of it as slowed down puppetry.
Right. Yeah.
Or sped up puppetry, I suppose. But but there's just something about an object coming to life that's so part of just a really basic human impulse, and also it delights in a way that I think digital doesn't always. And I think that's also why I just keep coming back to the puppet.
And it's fascinating right now because we see it in the schools. Younger children or even older, when they see a puppet show now, they're so fascinated by behind the scene and they want to see how one arm is moving because they're so used to virtual screens all the time. And to go back to and see real matter move with a human being, they find again the joy of, you know, bricoli.
Play.
So many companies talk about that after shows, meetings with the audience, you know, it's this fascination again. Oh, how does this work? And so it's really nice. Yeah.
And you'll find, you know, not only visual artists and performers and dancers, but also like engineers really like puppetry because it's all about like how do you make it work? You know, how do you achieve this effect? And sometimes it's a very simple mechanism, but sometimes it can get really complicated. And there's a real sort of puzzle to figuring out, how do you create this this object to move in a certain way to achieve the effect that you want to on stage or in a film or whatever it is.
When I watch something like The Ghastly Dreadfuls, which I love because it showcases all these different types of puppetry, I am so fascinated with like,
how did they do that?
I just want to know. And something else I really like is looking back at the history of puppetry, which is something that the Center for Puppetry Arts goes into and around the world. Is that something that either of you or both of you can speak to, some of the history, or and especially women, because this show is about women and feminism. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, puppetry has a long history, as in so many different cultures. Actually, one reason why I was so excited that Louise could join us is that we're both part of an organization called UNIMA, which is the oldest organization in the
oldest theater organization,
in the world. And it's an association of puppeteers. And so it's there are UNIMA centers in countries around the world. That's how I originally met Louise, is they have congresses every 4 years. And there are an incredible amount of women leaders within that organization. And I think in puppetry's history in general, I know in the States there's been many strong puppeteers who have been women who have sort of shaped at least American puppetry. And there's and internationally as well. And currently, there are many female puppeteers in film and TV. There's the Henson family. There are three really dynamic women that are all the daughters of Jim Henson, who are currently heading puppetry foundations and creating puppetry. And so the female presence in puppetry is strong, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. I think puppetry is in almost every culture in around the world, almost like masks. And nowadays, there are many more women studying puppetry. There's many men in the field and performing, but in professional schools, for example, there are many more women studying puppetry arts. I think it's not only puppetry, but also visual arts. You know? Like, for example, in Montreal, we have now a master degree level in puppetry arts since 2007, and it's a 2-year master degree. And for the last two promotions, it's only women studying the puppetry arts. So I think it's too bad, because it gives why is that happening like that? Mm-hmm. But still, I mean, there's a very big interest for women in puppetry arts, and they're doing exquisite shows. Like you had Ashes here, which is a Norwegian puppeteer who's world famous now. And so now we see many excellent international companies led by women.
That's awesome.
Yeah. We have some more of our discussion around women in puppeteering, but first, we have a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Tennessee just sounds perfect. Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise, all things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands. not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor. Now back to the interview. One thing that I find fascinating about the history of puppetry is how it was able to provide commentary on social things when perhaps no one else could, when it was sort of a dangerous thing. Mm-hmm. And before I, before we started recording this, I was reading about like puppetry used for empowering women in South Africa, and erotic puppetry in Turkey for women, like something that they're able to comment on that maybe they wouldn't be able to. And so I'm wondering, how do you think that puppetry can transcend in that way? I also saw, I think, one of the panels at one of these festivals or conferences was about using puppets for people who had experienced sexual trauma or something, like using it to help in that way. Just other ways that puppetry is this powerful art form.
Yeah, I've seen it being used for child therapy. Like, it's a form of therapy for a lot of children who's gone through trauma, and it's not necessarily that they're playing out trauma, but it's something to help kids speak up. What is it about that? That is a good question, because I've seen that as well, that children are able to communicate with things through the puppetry type of things. How's that even become a thing? That's fascinating too.
Well, puppetry and therapy, it's a big association also, around an international right. association. So, yeah, it's such a useful and strong tool to do therapy, and you need many experts use it to deal with different traumas with children and for adults. Mm-hmm. And I think because puppetry is so strong, because it's a mirror, so you're not, it's not you talking, or it's not someone talking to you, it's the puppet, so it's much more easier to get the distance. And I'm not a therapist, but I know the power the puppet can have, and I think that's why it's very strong.
Right. Mm. Yeah, I agree. There's that sense of it's the puppet talking, and there's a safety in that, and also in not only in therapy but in politics. I know that there's many instances and where there's the puppeteer has been able to speak truth to power in ways that possibly the human would not have been able to or be allowed to, but because it was a puppet in a puppet show, there was that distance or that sense of it. You know, it's the puppet, so it's okay.
One of the impetus for this episode, well, I guess, was two things. One, I fell in love with the Dark Crystal all over again. But two, like a year ago, there was a panel on women in puppetry, and I missed it, and I've been thinking about it ever since. But one of the women who was on the panel, when asked about like the differences in female characters versus male characters when it comes to puppets, that she said something like, I would always rather play a character that happens to be female. Are there things that you've noticed or you've experienced that are different when it comes to creating female character in puppet form?
In my experience, one of the values of puppetry is that you can be so many things that aren't what you physically are. You can, as a performer, you can go... You can stretch the boundaries of what maybe an audience might perceive you to be on stage. You can be five different characters that are completely different in look, size, personality, whatever that is. I think, there's certainly lots of males that perform female roles and females that perform male roles in puppetry. And there's some value in that. I think that sometimes and this can be in it's not just exclusive to puppetry, but, you know, there you can delve into stereotypes that are not, that can be dangerous, or not dangerous, but just questionable.
Right. Think about them.
So I think that there's, you know, you still have to be very mindful of representation. And because puppetry is such a strong representation, you can create something that is your visual idea of what a character is. And that way, it's like, it does bring up questions like, why does a witch always have to have, like, you know, a certain look, you know,
sure.
or the, you know, and and because you are able to physically sculpt, create this image of this character, which is a combination of characteristics, and it is a personality, you know, how do you create that rich personality within your visual design that is mindful of not drawing those very simple conclusions to, oh, this is this kind of character, so it's going to look like this. Or
right.
I think that's always a challenge in puppetry. I think I got away from the question, though.
No, that was great.
So, yeah, I was going to ask, because you were talking about that you were crafting, you were creating and making these puppets. What does it look like being behind the scenes and trying to create new characters? Because as you were talking about, you have to keep up with the ever-changing representation. And as we know right now, there's huge controversy about all of the different types of representation. What does that look like today, especially as a woman who would be creating and crafting these characters?
Well, I think puppetry stays a great tool to fight against this gender characterization. And I'm thinking maybe that's why there's so many women studying it, because it's an excellent way to break molds and propose something else. But creating different characters, I wouldn't have to think about this one, because when you create a character, you have to adapt to... You are more sensitive to what's going on now, for sure, but I don't know how it would show up in the actual object.
Well, how do you start creating something? Well, because I'm guessing you have to create, like, when you're going outside of the regular characters, how do you come up with these ideas? So, like, again, I'm thinking about along the lines of, like, creations like Cookie Monster and I actually remember the movie that I loved, Lily.
Yes.
It's one of my favorite movies. Like, the Quran was one of my favorite dancers way back when. But I was just thinking, I was like, oh, my God, I forgot. I used to love this movie, which was centered around puppetry and her falling in love with these characters. Mm-hmm. And some of these characters are very unusual characters, as we see. How do you come up with these ideas? Or how do people?
Well, to create a character, you start discussing with the director, or with yourself if you are the director. But you make a discussion on what's the character about, what's his emotion, her emotions, what's his movement, how does it move, and then you, depending on your strength or what kind of technique you want to use, it's very different feeling if you use a long string puppets, right. marionettes, because the gestures are very much different than the hand and the glove puppet, which is a direct connection and a very powerful. So you have to discuss that beforehand to see what you want to say again. Right. And then you start and research and... what's nice nowadays, it's we can use the traditional techniques, but also with the new medias, a lot of puppeteers are working with projection, live videos, and it's bringing a new wind into the traditional puppetry art. So that's what I can answer.
So can we come and hang out and make a puppet of ourselves?
Absolutely. We always make a puppet that looks quite... it's amazing to see it happening.
I want one. Annie, how do we make this happen?
Making these things happen.
I know. I want to make one of ourselves so we can just...
There are
on the panel.
Yeah, there are companies online, too, that that are... Like, there's an artist in Colorado, I think, that's, like, their bread and butter is making lookalike puppets. So... there are definitely people that specialize in that.
I know that seems really egocentric, but I'm like, ooh, How do I get out of working? I'm trying to get out of working personally, so I'm just going to find someone to mimic me.
That would be too much? Excellent. That's a Netflix show right there.
Yeah.
I don't realize that you've been replaced by a puppet.
The entire time it's a puppet, and it's not actually me.
Yes.
I'm trying to find an easy out. Sorry.
No worries.
But I think that is an interesting point as far as in deciding a puppet design. Part of it is what is the technique? Because, you know, how does each form of puppetry has a very different feeling to it. You know, hand puppets like the Muppets, you know, that's a very direct, you can get a lot of emotion out of the faces, and there's a real directness to that approach. Marionettes are perhaps, they're a little more, they can be graceful, but a little more removed, I would say.
Yeah, the distance makes
a there's a distance, even the distance between the puppeteer and the puppet, it just changes the personality and the sense of what this, the feeling for the audience. Same with like direct manipulation. Louise brought this beautiful picture, which audiences can't see, but of this chimpanzee puppet that's direct manipulation. And three person manipulation is one that, you know, you can get so much real subtle gestures and a real sense of subtle movement in those kind of puppets. So each one of those really creates a different feeling for the puppeteer and for the audience and a different set of challenges. So you'd also have to figure out what kind of puppet you want
to
be.
Yeah, I was going to say, so because as a novice, I didn't realize, I knew a marionette and I knew the hand puppet. What else is there? Because you were talking about projection.
There's a shadow puppetry, and there's object theater, which is now very popular. And there's rod puppets, and there's...
This may be too much to ask. Can you explain exactly what that is? Because like when you talk about object, what does that involve? You talked about there's three people that can coordinate. What? I'm all over the place. trying to learn.
So... The three-person technique, a lot of sort of inspired by a Japanese technique called bunraku, and it's there are three people. Usually, it's like one person on the head and right hand. There's another person on the feet and another person on the left hand, and they that sometimes switches up, but that's sort of the end. So they can really, and usually the joints are all articulated, so you can get a really, you know, natural movement out of that technique.
So are those pretty large in size? Or okay, wow, that's not
big. So what, the original bunrakus?
But I mean, you can get different sizes. It just depends on the design of the show and the puppets. And then there's the object theater is really you take objects and manipulate them, and it's really
Okay, so making the can come to life with
And usually with object theater, the particular objects might have. Be connected to a certain idea, or you know, they're a metaphor for something else that the you know, in the story that you're trying to tell. So, shadow puppetry is shadows, but can be giant puppetry. There are, you know, puppeteers that use masks and then have the full body plus the mask that makes the character on top of their heads.
So is that like the polar bear from Coca-Cola? Would he be?
That would be a body puppet.
Oh, so see, I'm learning so many things.
Yeah. Wow, yeah.
So the costume characters are in that body puppet range. So,
I'm fascinated now.
And there's a lot of research also for the last few decades ago. You know, shadow puppetry, for example, they used to be screen and shadows, and you would look in the front, and if you were a man, in the back, if you were a woman, they would be separating. But now there's a lot of research. You see the actual puppeteers holding the shadow and working with the lamp in his hand and moving the shadow, and the shadow is at the back of the stage and not front of the stage.
Right.
So it's fascinating. It's always questioning the relationship between the puppet, the uh-huh. object, and the actor, the manipulator. Uh-huh. And in this questioning, it's very interesting what's happening, and there's a lot of ongoing research about that. And what we must stress, I think, too, is that more and more we have to say that puppetry art was always for adults and family, but nowadays it's for many years it's always still often seen as only for children.
Right.
But it's of course there are exquisite shows for children, but they are beautiful shows for adults, and that's not as known. And what we started a few years ago to launch as an idea is often we used as an example cartoon. To say to people, you know, cartoon, it's for kids, but also there's excellent cartoons for adults. Right. And people say, oh, yeah, that's true. And now cartoon is recognized as the ninth art. Mm. So we said, why don't we do this with puppetry? So it was our 11th anniversary in Castellier. So we say, okay, we go for puppetry. Arts are the 11th art.
Okay.
So we're launching that. And we use that to, you know, to stress that puppetry arts is such a great theater form and for adults.
Well, I was going to say some of these things sound like it takes a lot of choreography between each of the different, especially if it's multi-people, multi-persons.
Mm-hmm. Multi-people, I like that.
I'm just going to say, I make up words, just so you know, I'm really good at this job and I make up words throughout. But yeah, that sounds like a lot of choreography has to be played, especially I know that you were talking about the Japanese form, I'm guessing that is exactly how it has to go. They have to practice almost their marks and their movement into whatever.
Well,
it
you have
be.
To spend 10 years on the feet, and then you move to wow. the left arm for 10 years, and then afterwards you might be the master dealing with the head.
Wow.
You know, it was very, very.
Don't you also have to sweep the floor for 10 years before all that?
Probably, but this is the original Bunraku, but now right. this technique has been transformed in all sorts of. New ways, but yeah, it's a very demanding learning. It's like, often it's compared to a musical instrument to right. manipulate a puppet.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Except for every puppet you pick up is like learning a new instrument.
Yes. Mm. You're talking about these different forms. I would think you would have mm-hmm. to specialize in each one for a little while to like learn that over again.
Yeah, well, and I think just also the construction can be, you know, one puppeteer from the center that I'll never forget, Lorna Halley. She was our head puppeteer for many years, and she would, when she was presented with a new puppet, she would pick it up and immediately just start playing with it and just try different things yeah. and be like, okay, how does this puppet work? And she would stretch it to its limits in order to be like, okay, what are the peculiarities of this puppet? How is it moved? How is it jointed? Like, what can I do with it? And that was always like, what's the potential for this object? Let me figure that out. Mm-hmm. And that was always so inspiring to me. And I think that's one of the joys of puppetry is you can be like, okay, what's the potential in this object? How do I make this puppet really come to life? And each one is really different and is different depending on the technique that's used, but also just the particular construction techniques as well.
Wow. So. Yeah. I'm fascinated by that and by, like, being able to communicate mannerisms with movements that you right. do. It blows my mind. We have a little bit more for you listeners, but first, we have one more quick break for a word from our sponsor.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor. Let's get back to the interview. So before we wrap up here, I would love if both of you, I know you've got like a 15-year anniversary and you've just opened up a center. Like what things are going on right now that people could look to, and what are you looking forward to in the future other than the 11th art?
I'm looking towards developing a partnership with the Center of Puppetry Arts in Atlanta.
Oh, yes.
Yes, please.
And I'm looking to help creation, to help the puppeteers to achieve their dream, their project. So if the house and what we do can push them, give them encouragement, that's what I look for, because I know the beauty of the results will be mesmerizing. And I'm a programmer because I want to have more people see and realize what puppetry can do.
I'm also looking forward to a partnership at the Center for Puppetry Arts. We have things going on all year round. and really, I want to find ways to connect this amazing place that we have in Atlanta to the world, and to really find, you know, there's so much, such a rich world of puppetry, and finding ways to bring that here to showcase it is really my goal.
Awesome. You guys have, do you have camps?
We have a camp. We have so much programming.
I hear about a lot of things that's happening. That's really amazing, and I just can't believe I haven't gone yet.
Yes, yeah, please do.
We have a great museum.
We have some international companies coming in. There's an Australian coming in February. Mm-hmm. And we've got museum programming all the time, family programming all the time. We're just about to open up our annual Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Christmas time.
Yeah, I know. It's already here.
Right. So where can we find you on the interwebs?
Castellier.ca.
Okay.
Yeah, Castellier means puppeteer. It means the person who worked in the Castellet, which is the puppet theater in French. Oh. So Castellier means puppeteer.
Okay.
And www.puppet.org, which is the center's website.
Find you immediately.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And listeners, definitely go check out, if you're near either of these centers, go check them out.
May I ask you a question? You're an actor, an actress?
Yes.
Would you work with puppets? Have you been in a production with puppets?
I have, yes. Much more of the like monster coming after you variety. and I have, in case it wasn't clear, I go to the Center of Puppetry Arts pretty regularly, and I've made some puppets there, but I have no real experience beyond that. But very interested. Yeah, I would love to work with them more.
This was definitely her idea. She was really excited about doing all these things and has talked about Dark Crystal and how much she loves it. So
yes, which is the interesting thing about that, going back to your point about how a lot of people, at least where we are, associate puppets with children. I had a friend who I made her watch that.
Not me.
And she was so upset at me because she's like, it's puppets. It's supposed to be happy. And I said, nuh-uh, not always. So I think it is changing.
Yeah.
As we are more exposed to it, and also as we more recognize it, because I think some people just don't think of puppets when they see them in bigger Hollywood movies or TV shows. They don't realize that that's a puppet.
I will say, when I watched Lily, how it represented different personalities of that one man, and it was like, what, five different characters? It was pretty good. I was like, that's really thought-provoking. I didn't think about how this was extensions of himself. Have you ever seen the movie?
No.
You're going to have to go watch it. It's really good.
Yeah.
I forgot how much I love that movie.
Okay.
That's awesome. Thank you. I'm really, because I didn't know anything about this. I was like, Annie, this is all you. Now I'm really excited and have to come visit.
Please. You should. Hey, yeah.
And Louisa's festival in March is phenomenal. So
thank you.
Also,
that's awesome. So where really is it in
Montreal?
Montreal. Yeah, okay. I guess we're going in April.
You're welcome.
We've been trying to write up trips. Yeah, this is where we're coming.
I would happily do that. Yes. Thank you both so much for coming.
Thank you very much.
This brings us to the end of our interview. Unfortunately, we had some time constraints, so we would have kept going and going and going.
I had so many more questions.
I know.
I did.
You got really into it at the end. I was like, yes, it's happening.
And this and this and this. I feel like we had a connection at one point. We were talking about Lily, as we were talking about.
I think you did. I feel very happy about this. And as we said, any listeners who are ever in those areas, Montreal or Atlanta, and I'm sure around the world, please write in if you have a similar center where you are. Check them out. They're really cool. I haven't been to the one in Montreal, but I can feel in my bones it's very cool. And we're planning.
We're going to go. I feel like this is definitely an episode happening in March.
Yeah, so we'll be there. We're just going to go ahead and say, yes, that's happening. And we'll probably have a bit more to say about this later, but that is all for today.
Thank you, guys.
Yes, thanks so much to our interviewees for coming in. Thanks, as always, to our super producer, Andrew Howard.
You're amazing.
And thanks to you for listening. And as always, you can write in at our email address, stuffmediamomstuff@iheartmedia.com. You can find us on Twitter at @MomStuffPodcast or on Instagram at @StuffMomNeverToldYou. We would love to hear from you.
Yes, please.
Stuff Mom Never Told You is a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Tennessee just sounds perfect. Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly boring since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.